master's and master's, if I'm going for master's, York is paying my tuition.
That's what I don't know. I don't know if I'm so supposed to apply for it.
No. York is paying for it. If I have a loan plus, I don't get the funding. York doesn't pay for me. I have to pay out of pocket. Or I can get OSAP. In that case, I would go for OSAP.
And also, I don't get to choose. And yeah, I was like, is this really for like first year when I'm trying to get into her job, or is it forever? She went, no, it's forever. Two years. So however much... What do you mean?
Thank you. was it possible that
Another guy,
I don't know.
What do you mean?
I got scared.
Thank you.
like, for example, a countdown.
Care about this, think about
No, they had. They were up to 13. What's the name of the iPhone? No, iPhone 1. Last one was X. Oh, it's so cool. I mean, X was 10.
Yeah.
that's a good place to find out what's going on. But also, now the main information is going to be up on the Moodle. So things like my email address, things like course text, all of that sort of stuff. If you are not, if you're registered for the course but I last didn't add, then it should have added you automatically to the Moodle. If you have registered later than that, or if you just find for some reason you don't seem to be on Moodle, or if you're not in the class but you do want to participate, I'm completely open to that as well. Let me know and I can add you manually. Although if you think you are registered and you didn't get added, that might be something to look into. Just make sure that you, if you want to be registered and you didn't get added, that might be a sign you're not. So definitely have the time to look into it. But regardless, if you're interested, if you're getting reviewed here or something, or if you have been able to register before or something like that, and you want to keep up to date with things, let me know and I can add you manually. Either send me an email if you have an email address, or if you don't, give me your email address if you want to be registered under. Your email address, or we'll arrange something. Happy to chat with people after class if they have questions, if they have quick questions, or longer questions if this is by appointment. There is another class that comes in pretty quickly after we're done our class, and it tends to be a lot of crowding, so I'm going to step just like literally outside there. So if you have any questions for me after class, if you want to catch me, completely open to that. But I am going to try to get outside the classroom as quickly as possible. So try to catch me just outside the class. Because if we're standing here, it really seems like the other students and the other instructor are kind of committed. So I'm not trying to run away, but I will try to physically run away. But certainly talk to me. So yeah, the main thing is the Moodle is up. It contains my email address. It contains a lot of the other basic course information, the marketing scheme, all that sort of stuff. It's there. And I hope that you have a midterm fairly soon. I need to get caught up in groups and things like that. But I'm going to make you aware that I'm going to have to announce them soon so you have some time. So that will be happening fairly soon. Information like that will go up on the Moodle as well as stuff like the announcements that I made earlier where someone contacted me and said your students might be interested in this event. That sort of thing will go on the Moodle as well. There's a few different fora and you can decide what you care about. There's a course announcements one, and that's going to have things like midterms or things like that. And there's also where I have not yet posted any problem sets, but I will post problem sets there. Problem sets are not going to be marked. You're not going to get marked. They're not in the marking scheme. But they're a really good way to just test if you're following along, so I hope you went out very quickly to make sure you're still reviewing in your algebra, but for some of you haven't seen this before, and for some of you, it's been a long time. So it's a really good way to just go through and make sure you kind of know how to ask questions and you're getting the right answers. And if you find you're not, that's a good time to try to chat with me or chat with someone else to try to, figure out what's going wrong. So they won't be marked, but we'll try to get a few suggested practice problems out of the website. Again, website is not mandatory. And it will not be marked. You will be using the mark. Some of you have it from other courses already anyway. So, and sometimes it's sort of fun to do the website version, like you guys do this in an interactive computer way rather than just writing on paper. So I'll put up a few of those as well. And those are all, things like that are going to get posted on Moodle. All the sets are going to be on Moodle when they do appear. There's a few different forums as well. So I encourage you, because there's a course announcement one, that one's important, that's going to have things like midterms, that kind of thing. But other ones are not as important, so things like announcements that people have asked me to make here. You might want to know about them, but they're not as vital. So I'm keeping them a separate fora, as well as a discussion one. So if you are, interested in something or confused about something, that's actually not a bad place to go. Like, you could ask the other students. You could say, I'm learning this, if I get my head around this math thing, what do people think about this? Or I was working on this problem and I seem to get, different answers and in the back of the book. Certainly you're welcome to come to me as well. And certainly, as I said, you can't make my office hours. Those are also posted on the Moodle. If you can't make the office hours, feel free to get in touch with me and we'll arrange a different time. But another good place is the Moodle. You can just say, I was working on the problem and I got an answer to different people that were in the back of the book. Did anyone else have a similar problem? The back of the book makes errors too, it turns out. So that's something that will come up. So you can put it on the forum and maybe someone else will be like, I have a similar problem, but we worked on it and we have to figure out this is what's going on. I will check in on the class discussion one as well occasionally. It's not a great thing for just getting a question, but I will occasionally look in to see if there's a discussion going on
Then what
we do is we expand along the lower column. I'm going to do rows just to keep it simple. Those of you who have done this before, you know you can expand along any row or any column. You have to keep track of signs. I don't want to confuse anyone who hasn't seen this before, so if you haven't seen this before, ignore what I'm currently saying. But if you have seen it before, I wanted to sort of connect in and mesh with things you've seen before to also not confuse you. So those of you who've seen it before, you're aware that you can expand along any row or column, and you just have to keep track of some sign issues. I'm just going to expand along the top row to keep things simple. Certainly in your Linnell courses, you're going to be doing a lot more determinants. You're going to be doing harder determinants, and there's going to be a lot of tricks that you'll learn to like compute them more efficiently. Our course, that's not going to come up as much, so I'm going to try to keep it simple. So ignore all of that if you've never seen determinants before. Just ignore everything I just said. It might just confuse you. And I'm just going to show you one way of computing it. But if you have seen other things, this is just a part of that. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to expand along the first column, the AB. And what that means is I'm going to say, I'm going to look at the first element of this matrix, the first element in the first column. And then I'm going to look at, if I knock out that row and column, what remains? In this case, it's just one element, but you can imagine, I'll show you a bigger example, and it's going to leave you with a bigger matrix as well. And then I'm going to take the determinant of this part that remains, which is really easy to do, because that's just D. And I'm going to multiply them together. And I'm going to keep a running tally. So I'm going to keep a running tally over here. Determinant of A, B, C, D. And again, the notation that you might see being used is just these bars like this. And they might not even write in the matrix bracket, so you might get something like this. So that's just notation. And I'm going to keep a running tally. So I'm going to take A, which is the one I started with, and I'm going to multiply it by the determinant of this remaining part, which is D. And this is not a complete answer yet, but this is in my running tally. Then, I'm going to look at the next thing in this row. So I've looked at A already, and now I'm going to look at D. And I'm going to cross out that row and column, and look at the remaining part, which is a submatrix, a smaller matrix, but in this case, again, it's a very simple matrix. This is just one thing. And it's C. So I'm going to then, but another thing I'm going to have to keep track of is I'm going to change signs as I go. So here, I added it in. The next one, I'm going to subtract it. And if I have a larger matrix, I'm going to keep doing that. I'm going to start with adding, then subtract it, and then adding, and then subtract it, and so on. So I've now exhausted my first row, and so that means I'm done. So this is my determinant of my 2x2 matrix. It is AD minus BC. This is a fairly simple formula, so you'll probably just like keep that one in your head. That if you have a 2x2 matrix, this is the formula for the determinant. Easy enough to do an example, if I just throw some numbers into a matrix, I'll take a determinant of 1, 3, 7, negative 2. Then this is expanding along the first row. I take 1 times the remaining part, which is negative 2, so this is 1 times negative 2. And then I remember to subtract the next term. And then I take the 3 times the 7. So this I can calculate fairly easily, and this is equal to negative 23. So I have a final answer. So that's how I take the determinant of a 2x2 matrix. But as I said, easy enough to just sort of have this formula in your head. I'm not going to be making you do too many of these, and they won't be huge. But now this allows us to define what it is to take a determinant on a 3x3 matrix, and so on. So if I have a 3x3 matrix, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to expand along this first column, and I'm going to take of our matrix, I'm going to call it A. Determinant of A, I'm going to keep my running tally here. So the first thing I'm going to do is, I don't know how well this calculator is showing up, so I'm going to, okay. So I'm going to start with my first element and the first row, and then I'm going to cross out the row and column that it's in. And this leaves me now with a bigger matrix. This is actually not a 1x1 matrix. So the little bit more complicated. You'll get used to doing these. They're a bit of a nuisance, but this is, it's sort of a bit of a tedious chore to do these computations, but I want you to see how it works. So what I'm going to do in my running tally is I'm going to say this A times the determinant of this other matrix, E, F, H, I. And then the next one I'm going to subtract, and that's going to be focusing in on the second element, B. And then it's going to be times the determinant of another matrix. So if I focus in on D here, then I'm going to now cross out the row and column that it's in. And the remaining elements are now, they're split up, but I can still put them together and form a matrix with them. So these are the guys that aren't in the row and column that I just crossed out. And I am going to put those into a matrix. So that's D, F, G, and I. And then I'm going to go back to adding. So remember, I alternate adding and subtracting. So this is going to be focusing on C times the determinant of another matrix, which I'm going to start with C here, and I'm going to cross out the row and the column that it's part of, and then it's now this submatrix here. So this is my don't go by these notes standing. Like, this is just going to look like a mess by the end of this. It's not going to be very readable, but this is what I'd be doing if I were working on the chalkboard similarly, is that I'm going to sort of be editing as I go. So the final version of this might not be very pretty to look at, so this is why I want you to have something in your own notes that you can read. So this remaining matrix, again, I can write that out, D, B, and G, H. And this is going to be my formula for my determinant. And then I can just sort of do that. It's a bit of a nuisance, but I can work out a formula. If you don't memorize the formula for the 3x3 matrix determinant, it's just too big. Or if I can do it too much, I don't want to tell you not to, but like, you don't need to yet.
And also, you should memorize it because depending on what rows or the columns, like you do it along any row or any column, meaning that isn't necessarily the best one to use. Maybe the first row. If there's ones with zero, you should get rid of them.
Yes, so we just had a question here or a comment here about expanding the matrix on different rows and columns, and this is possible to do, as I was saying earlier. You can do that along different rows and columns, you have to track your sign. So those of you who've seen it before, who are taking them in your algebra course, that's how this fits in with what you're doing there. For those of you who didn't understand what I just said, and if you're not taking them in your algebra course, don't worry about it, because I'm only going to worry about expanding along the first row, not finding a different row or a different column to do this expansion, just to keep it simple in this course. So this I can then expand out. I can then just, I know a formula for the 2x2 matrices, so I can say this is A times the determinant of this guy, which is EI, minus FH, and then I can say this is minus B times DI minus FG plus C times DH minus EG. So I have a formula. It's not particularly rewarding, but it is possible to do. Yep?
So question. So the coefficient of A is positive and B is negative and C is positive. Do we just keep rotating between positive and negative?
Yes, exactly.
For each time?
Yeah.
So every even column is negative, every odd column is positive.
Yes. So that was a really good question. I'm pointing out that I put a positive sign here. Well, I didn't write it, but there's a positive sign here, and a negative sign here, and a positive sign here. So this is part of the rule of how you compute it. Just like how we did this one up here, we started with a positive sign and then went negative. Now the next one, so we have positive and then a negative. And then in this one, we have positive, negative, positive. And so if you're doing a higher dimensional determinant, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to go positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative, as far as it goes. But in this class, I don't think I'm ever going to ask you to take a determinant that's any bigger than 3x3. And I probably won't ask you to do that many of those. But you do have to keep track of the signs. But yeah, you won't have to do too many of these in this class. So you're going to do some Lin-alge or have done some Lin-alge. And there you might take a lot of bigger determinants. So you're going to have to keep that in mind. You know, positive, negative, and so on.
Yeah, in general, the negative 1 to the I plus 10,
Yes, that's true. I'm hoping you can do this. write that guy out. I can say it's 0 times 1, so I'm not going to bother writing that down. And then it's minus 5 times negative 3. So, well, why don't I write 0 times 1 just so you can keep track of it? 0 times 1 minus 5 times negative 3. So that's going to end up being a plus in the end. So that's my first term, using the 1 and the submatrix that I have when I take out its row and column. And then I'm going to have the next one, and that's going to have a minus sign in front. So these are useful things to keep track of. So this is a plus sign, it is not written. And here we have a minus sign. Doesn't show up super well, but you know what I'm saying. So now I'm going to look at the next item in my row, and this is a 4.
It's dumb.
And then I want to multiply by, if I take out the row and column that contain the 4, then this gives me another matrix, the 2, 5, and negative 2, 1. So then I get to be a submatrix. And then I'm going to take that determinant, and I remember how to do that. I say 2 times 1 minus 5 times negative 2. And then I'm going to look at the last guy, and this is going to have a plus. So these are going to alternate. And if I were doing a bigger matrix, if I were doing a 4x4, the next one would have a minus. If I were doing a 5x5, there would be another one that has a plus after that. So I'm going to start with a plus. And then I'm going to say, well, that's a negative 3. And then I'm going to cover up that row and column and look at that matrix there. So I'm going to get 2 times negative 3, and then minus 0 times negative 2. And then just like in this computer. So here I get 1 times this value here, which is, you know, 0 times 1, so that's 0, minus 5 times negative 3. So 5 times negative 3 is equal to negative 15. And if I make that negative again, then that's positive 15, so that's just 1 times 15. Here I have negative 4. Times the value of the brackets, and here I have 2 times 1 is just 2, and then negative 5 times negative 2, so 5 times negative 2 again is just negative 10, with the negative sign, it's negative positive 10, and then for this last guy here, I have minus 3, I can just skip having that positive sign there, times negative 6, minus 0. So in this whole thing, I get 15, that's 12, so that's going to be minus 48, and this is a plus 18. So this whole thing, and I can tally it up, and get, I guess these together will be negative 30, and that'll give me another 15, so this will be in total a negative 15. So that's how you calculate it. So some of you have seen these before, and you're a bit familiar with the properties. Some of you may not have, so that's why we're doing a bit of a review. I'm trying to keep it relatively simple, so I'm not going to get into the full detail of what a determinant does. All the D properties are actually pretty interesting. We have a lot of really bad properties, but I'm just going to try to keep it simple.
We got the last row on the application for the
Sorry?
Sorry.
The last row?
Sorry, do you mind just that?
Okay, so that's how I calculate a determinant. Now, this is really useful to us because we're going to define something now called a cross product. So a cross product, the textbook approaches it slightly differently. I'm going to cover all the same stuff, but I'm going to approach it from the determinant. This is in your textbook as well. So what you do is you kind of use the trick of calculating a determinant, and you use it to take a product of two vectors, it gives you another vector. So what you do is if I have a vector v, which is equal to v1, v2, v3, and then I have another vector w, which is equal to w1, w2, w3, and I want to take what's called the cross product, what I do is I take the determinant in a sort of symbolic sense. So I do all these computations, except in the top row, I'm going to have, instead of numbers, I'm going to have unit vectors. Now this seems a little bit kind of weird, like you can't really stick a unit vector in there. But, so this doesn't completely make mathematical sense, but it turns out if I do the same operation, I get this really useful product. So I'll have the unit vector I, which we remember, I guess some of you may have seen this before, so you have it. This is the unit vector that points along the x direction, so that I is over it's in different color. I is equal to 0, 1, 0, 0, j is equal to 0, 1, 0, and k is equal to 0, 0, 1. So these are unit vectors that point in the directions of the coordinate axes, and these are useful to have for some of our computations. So I'm sticking a vector into a matrix, which doesn't, as I said, this doesn't make a lot of sense. If you're kind of going, that's weird, you're right, that is weird. But it actually turns out if you just do the computations, it kind of works. So I stick my unit vectors in the top row of this matrix, and then I put in the components. These are just numbers. So v is a vector and w is a vector. These coordinates are just components, are just numbers. So these are numbers. These can go into a matrix. That's perfectly reasonable. So I'm going to put all these numbers into this matrix, and then I'm going to take the determinant of this. And as a result, I'm going to end up with I times various things, this unit vector, and j times various things, and k times various things, and I'm going to be adding and subtracting. But you remember, we know how to multiply a vector by a number, which is what I'm going to get. When I take this, when I expand along this row, I'm going to take the determinant of this, and that's just a number. We know how to multiply a vector by a number, and we know how to add and subtract vectors. So everything we're doing, we can do, even though, as I said, it's a bit weird to be sticking a vector into a matrix. If that makes you uncomfortable, that's a sign that you've got some good mathematical intuition, that, you know, these weird operations seem a bit weird to you, but it turns out we can do it. So if I take this determinant, what this ends up being equal to, so this is a useful way to remember it. If you don't remember the formula for the cross product, just remember to put them into the determinant like this. Or you can memorize the formula for the cross product. You can kind of do either one depending on which one you find to do better. I want you to know at least one of those, so either remember to put it in the determinant or remember to put the formula to write down. Yeah?
What
about
the shoelace method?
Which method? You can use whatever method that to remember that you want, as long as sorry. I've got to keep things simple for the other students, but if you have another method that you like, then by all means, what you do works for you. So if you see this other course and you have another, basically what I'm going to want is for you to be able to do a cross product. So I might, on an exam or something, I might just give you a cross product to do. And you know, that might be something that I'll just ask you to do, or I might give you a slightly more abstract thing. I might give you something that has a few variables in it, but I still want you to, like, you know, keep those as variables and then do a cross product and end up with, you know, an answer that has variables in it, so I might have you doing that. So basically that's what I want. I want you to be able to do them, which means however you find it useful to memorize it, to memorize the formula, whether it's like this determinant formula or whether it's, you know, the formula that we're going to work out, or whatever else you see in another class, you're completely welcome to whatever works for you. So when I expand on this determinant, I get my I vector times the scalar, which is v2 w3 minus g3 w2 minus the j vector, which is, and then times this determinant again, I'm blocking out g's, and I have a sub vector with the v1 v3 w1 w3. So I get determinant v1 w3 v3 w1 plus k vector times, again blocking of these guys, v1 w2 minus v2 w1, and multiplying an I or j or k by this number just takes this vector here and multiplies it by that number, which we learned how to do in a previous class. And so what that's going to give us is, this is going to put this number into the first component, this is going to put this number in the second component, and the other one is just zero, and this is going to put this number in the third component. So what I'm going to get is v2 w3 minus v3 w2, comma zero, minus zero, comma this expression here, comma zero, plus 0, 0, v1, w2, minus v2, w1. So I have these vectors, and then I can just add and subtract those vectors, which is something we know how to do. We just do that with each component. So I look at the first component, and the only guy who has something other than 0 in the first component is this guy, so I can fill that in. And the only one with something in the second component is this guy. So if you fill that in, the rotor has got a negative sign now. So it looks like this. And then the third guy looks like this. So this is what my cross product ends up looking like. So however you find it easier to compute or to remember the formula, do what works for you. If you've seen it in a previous class, that's great too. So to do an example, if I have, say my vector z is equal to 2, 3, 0, and my vector w is equal to negative 1, 2, 1, then I want to take the cross product of those two things. So what I can do is I can either just plug them into this formula, which I can do, figuring out what, you know, v and w with all those digits on them is, or I can stick them into the determinant. So what I would get is, if I'm going to do the determinant method, I'm going to say the determinant is I have my I unit vector, my j, and my k, and then I'm going to just write out these vectors. And these are, this is just numbers. So then I can do operations that I'm used to doing there. And then I'm saying, okay, well, what component do I get on this I? And that's actually, I can skip a few steps here. I can say, well, that's the only thing I'm actually going to get in the first component. So I'm going to say, what's the determinant of this guy? And that's 3 times 1, that's 3 minus something times 0. So I'm just going to get a 3 in there. And then for the next guy, I have to remember to put a negative sign in. And then I have to look at the determinant of this matrix. So that's 2 times 1, which is 2, times 0 times something. So again, I can just not write that down. So keeping my tally, I get negative 2. And then the third guy, I say, okay, well, this is going to be 2 times 2, which is 4, minus 3 times negative 1, which is negative 3. So what I get here is this. And to get my exact answer, I just get 3, negative 2, 7. So this is a cross product of two vectors. And this is how it's defined. Some of you who know some properties of determinants might find it's useful to understand some of the properties of the cross products in terms of them. Some of you don't. Hopefully it won't matter too much. So that's how to do one. And then we're going to define something called a triple product, which is where we just take the three vectors and put them into a matrix and take the determinant. So on the previous page, where I had a determinant, if I have, this is my first vector, this is my second vector, and this is my third vector, I just take the determinant. And what that turns out to be equivalent to doing is if I was taking the cross product of the second two vectors, this guy and this guy, then I have my I, j, and k up here. So my first component is going to be given by this submatrix, by whatever ends up in the first component, and you know, I'm going to get a second component and a third component. And then if I want to take the dot product, I take the first component and multiply it by the first component of whatever I'm taking the dot product to. So for this guy, I take the first component and multiply it by 1. And if I'm taking the second component and I'm multiplying it by 4, and the third component multiplying by 3, adding all this up, what that ends up being equivalent to, sorry if that was a little bit confusing, but what that ends up being equivalent to is the triple product of A, B, and C, where these are all vectors, is going to be, triple product is A dot with B cross C. And what this is what that whole preamble was about, was saying that this is equivalent to. Yes, that's also true. So it's equivalent to determinant if I put my elements into the matrix like this. If I just put my three vectors in like this and took the determinant, then that's the same as if I took the cross product of the second two and then took the dot product of this one. So it's the same operation because if I ignore this guy and take my cross products instead of the triple product, then I'm going to get, you know, my values for my components 1, 2, and 3 based on the submatrices of these guys down here. And then that's going to sort of automatically multiply by the right thing when I take this determinant. So instead of this formula that we had up here, where we ended up with everything multiplied by I, everything multiplied to the first component, second component, third component, they multiply instead by the components of the A vectors that I change the dot product, and that's exactly the dot product operation. So this is a way using those operations to get the determinant of the three vectors. So these are how dot products and cross products and determinants and things are kind of related to each other. There's some kind of neat geometry there. Like, it does some pretty nice magical geometry things for us, and that's the main thing we're going to use it for. So there's a bunch of properties and things. But the main thing that I want you to know, and I'm not going to ask you to show this, in fact, I think I don't have a ton of time. Yep.
So just to confirm, the order in which you put those two components, so for instance, if you put these vectors, just put them into the second row and C's in the third, that's vector B crossing, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if you switch them, that would be C crossing.
Yeah. Okay. So that was the question, is saying when I'm taking the cross product of B and C, then I put them in the second and third rows, because when I'm just taking the cross product, I would be putting the unit vectors in the top row, and that would be taken up by that. But because I'm taking the, and then taking the dot product with A, it turns out I could skip with the example and just put the A components in the top. So you just don't work out the algebra too, that turns out the algebra the same. So the main thing that I want you to know about cross product is, and many of you've probably seen this before, is a theorem that says that the cross product, A cross B, is perpendicular to both A and B. So this is the main point where it's useful, but this is tremendously useful because there's going to be times where you get given two vectors and you want to find a third vector that's perpendicular to both of them, so you can make, for example, a coordinate system. Maybe you can't use the usual coordinate system, and so you need a third one and you need it to be perpendicular to both. So this is a way to get something that's perpendicular to both. Or at the very least, some of you have done your linear algebra, you know this idea of things being linearly independent. My coordinate system may not have to be all right angle, but I still need to be able to like get to everything in three-dimensional space. So if I only have two vectors, I can't get to everything. So I can only get to the things in that plane. And I want to get to all the other ones. So if I need to have to find some vector that's going to point me off in another direction, given those two vectors, I can build it this way. So that's one of the most important things. So this is probably the most important property. And also that the length of the cross product, A cross B, is equal to the length of A times the length of B times the sine of theta, where theta is the angle between the two vectors. So these are the most important, and I said in particular, this is the most important thing to know, and this is also useful and important to know, and those are the main things. The textbook has a few more properties as well, which I'll sort of briefly discuss a bit, but these are the most important things. I don't have to go over the full proof. There's a proof in your textbook, but I'll give you the outline. The textbook actually starts out by just saying, say you want to have a vector that's perpendicular to two given vectors, and then it says, how would you find this? And the idea is, well, we looked at the dot product, and we said that if we take the dot product of two vectors, we know if it's perpendicular or not, because if it's perpendicular, and we take a dot product, it's zero. So what we're doing in how the textbook starts out, the chapter says, well, say we want to find something perpendicular to both A and B, then I can say, so I want C to be perpendicular to B, perp to both A and B, then I'm going to write down an equation and say, like, well, the dot product A1, B1 plus A2, B2 plus A3, B3, I want that to be equal to 0, and I want that to be true with B as well. So I want both of those to be true. So some of you, as I said, some of you have taken linear algebra, and you know how to solve equations like that, and the textbook just goes through solving that. And when you actually solve that, what you end up with is the formula that I gave you earlier. So I'm not going to go through that because those of you who are comfortable with it can do it on your own, and those of you who haven't seen that math before, you don't have to worry about it. So if you want to sort of make everything gel by connecting it in with all the other math you've seen, you can go through the calculations yourself if you'd like, or you can look at the textbook which goes through the calculations. But basically, if I solve for these equations, I'm actually going to get a lot of different possible solutions, because if I have two vectors, then there's a lot of vectors perpendicular to both. So say they're both in this plane, anything that's sticking straight out of the plane is going to be perpendicular. So you're actually going to get a whole bunch of solutions, but you know, one of them is going to be the formula language. This is how the textbook introduces it, because this is a really important problem. This is a way to get something that's perpendicular to both. The way that we would show that is we just sort of plug in the formulas. We can say, well, how do you test if something perpendicular? Well, I can calculate this cross product, and then I can just plug in the vector, plug in A again and take a dot product of A, or plug in B and take a dot product of B, and both of those are going to turn out to be zero. And this is just going to be a lot of just algebra. This is done in your textbook. I don't think I need to do this here. You guys know how to do algebra. But one of the things, for those of you who've seen determinants before, how this comes up is if I'm taking this cross product here of A and B, or B and C in this case, and then I'm taking the dot product with A, but A is equal to either B or C. So I'm taking this cross product of B and C, and I'm saying, the result, I think this is going to be perpendicular to both B and C. How do I test that? I say, okay, I plug in B here and show that that's going to be equal to zero, and then I plug in C here and show that that's also zero. What this amounts to doing is taking this determinant, except here, I have either B or C. And for those of you who've seen determinants before, you know that one of the rules of determinants is that if you have two of the same row, it always turns out to be zero. So for those of you who've seen them before, that will turn out to be zero, which means that what we said earlier, that this was going to be zero, and that meant that they were going to be perpendicular, that's true. So if you haven't seen determinants before and you're not used to linear algebra, don't worry about what I just said. I'm hoping it will connect things up for people who have seen linear algebra, for those of you who haven't, don't worry about it. And I'm not going to show you the proof for this. Yes, that force to a wrench. question that you have. So as I said, the main things to remember are these two things, and we're going to use cross products. We're going to be using the geometry things. So the main thing is this. So I might give you a problem where you have to find something that's perpendicular to two vectors, or where it's part of a problem to find something perpendicular to two vectors, and this is a way to do it. And also to remember this fact. And again, if you want to go through the algebra, I highly encourage you. It's in your textbook. But it's not particularly illuminating. It's just going to show you that it's true. So you remember if you interchange two rows, then it changes the sign.
So this would be better than after that. You have this one here. So is it possible to be like, two vector product?
Yeah, so this is in some sense a two vector product. Yeah, you can do that if you want.
How do you do that?
There'd be a big formula for it, but basically you just calculate what the cross product of these guys is, and then you calculate the cross product of
them. Well, how do you do it iteratively? I know that it's equal to this, but how would you do it?
You just work through all of the steps like up here.
Oh, that means a big matrix?
You have the one matrix to do this, right? And then you have another matrix once you have the answer there.
So the final answer will be determinant of two by two matrix.
Yeah. But you have to do one first, so you maybe have to put brackets in and then you say you're doing that one first, and then you have an answer, and then you take the
cross-particle signal. So that is something you can do.
I was supposed to take the last year, but I forgot
something. Sorry? Is it cumulative?
It's not bad.
Is it what?
Cumulative.
I'm not sure what the word is.
Is that you can change the
bracket? Oh, cumulative. Yeah. It actually, I forgot to mention this in class, but it actually changes the sign. So you get the same value, but the same vector, except it points the opposite direction.
Oh,
So you just consider this one as a dot. I think between I and here, you consider this thing as a.
So this is actually a number. And so as a number, this is a scalar product. You just multiply your vector by a number. You can multiply it by a number, and you just multiply each of the components. So
that's the rest of them will become 0, 0, 0, because we just use that one pattern.
I would multiply this number by 0 as well, but that just gives me 0.
It's just a scalar product,
yeah.
Because
you take a dot product, you just have a number, and then you can't do your cross product.
When is it? Yeah, which is 7?
Like, if you try to do the dot product first, then you have a number, and then that's not a vector.
You know, I'm like this Romanian guy from 839.
Yeah, like, certain times, like, I just wonder if I'm like,
imagine something like ascendancy is like a more perpendicular, it is going to be more larger.
The thumb circle is
like 7 by 1.
There actually is, if they're parallel, they'll be 0. And then if you're perpendicular, that's when it's somewhere. So if it's perpendicular, that's when you get the biggest answer. And if it's parallel, you get 0. Or anti-parallel, you get 0. But if you get something in between, it'll be the sign. And then this one you have a sign, so when is sign 0?
So what's the angle to the now? Yeah, so when they're
So this one we're looking at two different products. They're very different.
I was like, nah, this can't be.
So that's the angle that you do with the side of it.
Oh, I see. Not MES1, right?
Yeah. MES1. But then, yeah, that looks like something that's perpendicular to both.
Oh, I see.
That's your whole line.
Exactly.
Oh.
That helps?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.